Modern Christians do their darndest to make creation and evolution mesh, which is really quite a trick. And one of the ways they do this is to say creation days might not have only been 24 hours long. And then they quote 2 Peter 3:8 to prove their point. With the Lord, one day is as a thousand years, and a thousand years as one day. First of all, if evolution is going to work, one day is going to have to equal a whale of a lot more than a thousand years. You're going to need each day to equal at least a million years, if not more. Second of all, if you're going to claim that one creative day is the same as a thousand years, you're going to have to be consistent across the board. To be consistent, you have to say in Noah's day, it didn't rain for 40 days, it rained for 40,000 years. And you have to say that Jonah wasn't in the fish's belly for 3 days, he was in there for 3,000 years. Jesus wasn't in the tomb for 3 days, he was in there for 3,000 years. Thirdly, if each creative day equaled 1,000 years, we are left with some serious mathematical problems. We are told on the seventh day, God rested. If each creative day took 1,000 years, God is still resting because creationists believe that the earth is around 6,000 years old. That means God is not answering our prayers today because he's still napping for another 500 to 1,000 years. Plus, the guy we thought was Jesus can't be. The real Jesus has not been born yet, if this is true. We know that Adam was created on the sixth day, and he lived through the rest of the sixth day, lived through the seventh day, and was kicked out of the Garden of Eden on the eighth day. If each day really did equal 1,000 years, Adam lived to be 2,000 years old. But the Bible says that Adam was 930 years old when he died. Now, that's still pretty old, but not as old as 2,000. For mathematical reasons, I do not believe that each day was 1,000 years, and I especially do not believe that each day was a geological age, because you would have to make Adam at least 50 million years old upon his death. I'm just simple enough to believe creation days were 24-hour periods, starting with the word that Genesis uses for time periods in which God created. It's the word yom, Y-O-M. It literally means a day. I'm sure you've all heard of Yom Kippur, right? It means Day of Atonement. In the Bible, the use of a number along with the word yom always means a 24-hour period. In Genesis, after each creative day, a number is associated with the yom, or the day. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first. There's your number, yom, day. There's your day. The Bible does not give us all the scientific details about how it all happened. The Bible is mainly a history book and not a science book. Genesis simply tells us that God made the heavens and the earth, and then he made humans. We, as humans, actually get a little more detail about the creation of us than we do the rest of the earth. Now, people have gotten pretty mad at me when I say, I believe God created everything. Many years ago, I taught a class titled Creationism for CLR, and sure enough, people got mad at me. One man asked me why I didn't teach evolution so that I could give both sides an equal shot. And I asked him if he noticed the title of the class was Creationism and not Evolutionism. That, and honestly, I'm not an expert on evolution, and I wouldn't try to teach brain surgery either. But the goal of this sermon is not to start an argument about evolution, but to cause us to think about creation, and in particular, our creation. How you feel about yourself is going to be radically different if you believe you are a product of evolution rather than a special creation of God. Not only do I believe I was created by God, I want to believe I was created by God. To me, the alternative is depressing. I believe I was not an accident. I am here for a reason, and I am going somewhere. God has a purpose for me. These are thoughts that you will hear in some of our freedom sessions. You're not an accident. God wanted you here. Genesis 1 is the Bible's ancient recording of the beginnings of human history. Our history begins in Genesis 1:26. Then God said. Yes, God speaks. He did then, and he still does today. And when he speaks, amazing things happen. God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Notice the plural language. The first thing we learn is a triune God made us. God made you. You're not an accident. You're not a roll of the dice. You are the handiwork of God. This should influence the way you think about yourself and the way you think about others. Now, I've heard people say that God created man because he was lonely. He was getting pretty bored up there with Jesus and the Holy Spirit. I mean, how much conversation can you have with two other Godheads? I don't know. But God was not lonely. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit were doing just fine until we showed up. I think we made their lives a lot more difficult. The concept of identity has dramatically shifted from when I was a kid. Today, kids are asking more than ever, who am I? And it's probably a more important question today than it ever has been. Today, kids are wondering, could I be a boy even though I have a female body? Could I be a girl even though I have a male body? Or the next thing down the pike, it's already here, am I a furry? For those of you in my age bracket, a furry is a person who thinks that they are another species, namely an animal. The furry population is growing in the United States. Now, I watched a podcast yesterday. I know you're surprised that I'm watching podcasts, but I watched a podcast on this subject, and an expert on the subject kind of traced, especially among the female population in the United States, what is going on. So he started with the eating disorders that were going on, you know, the 80s, 90s, and then it turned into cutting. You remember that? Mainly it was females cutting. And now it has turned into transgenderism. And the very next thing after transgenderism is going to be furryism. There's even a store in the mall where you can buy a tail that corresponds to whatever animal you believe you are. You don't know who you are if you don't know who God is. You don't know who you are if you don't know what God has said about you. Once you know who God is and what God said about you, then you can figure out who you are. Until you know any of that, you have no earthly idea who you are. God said after he created you, either male or female, that you were very good. How does that make you feel? God said about you, you are very good. Things can get very tragic when people don't know who they are. An exaggerated example of this is Robin Westman, who identified as transgender. You might remember him as the Catholic school shooter. There were several contributing factors that led him to commit such a horrific crime, but the root of it is he did not know who he was. It's that simple and it's that complicated. He believed he was a woman, but then he realized that he wasn't. In fact, there's articles out now saying that he wished, before he committed this crime, he wished he'd never started the transgender journey at all. That he realized that wasn't him, and now he didn't know who he was. And things really fell apart because this guy didn't know who he was, and innocent children paid for it with their lives. If you find yourself doing destructive things, I think you should stop and ask yourself, is this who God says I am? Is this who I am? What does God say about me? Genesis 1 tells us who we are. We are God's creation. It tells us where we belong. We actually have a position in this universe. God is up there, and we're below God, and the animals are below us. Genesis 1:26, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. In the Bible, dominion doesn't mean to dominate. It means to have responsibility for. We are the rulers of and caretakers of lower creation. This spring, Jim saw a little animal running through our garage, and after he saw it, he didn't know exactly what it was, and then he couldn't find it. Later that day, I found it. It was laying under the garage step. it was a baby bunny, and it was obviously dying. So I called Zeb up from his apartment to help, because basically, I didn't want to touch it because I'm a big chicken. So Zeb came up, and he tenderly picked it up and carried it outside. And I tried to give it some water from a dropper, but it wouldn't take it. So Zeb moved it under a bush to let it die in peace and to keep the other animals from getting it. And then after it died, Jim buried it. Now, why would we go to all this trouble for a little bunny who would have grown up to eat all our flowers and our neighbor's flowers? Because we know who God is, and we know who we are, and therefore, we know what to do. It is our place to take care of the animals, but we are not them. We are above them. The Bible tells us we are human. The same root word for human is the same root word for humility. The trick is to be a good human, is to have the humility to know what our place is. If we don't understand who God is and who we are, we don't know our place, and then we make two errors. And the first one is we elevate ourselves way too high. We think we're God. We say, I'm the boss of myself. The second error is we push ourselves down and see ourselves as just highly evolved animals. The head of ethical treatment of animals said, a pig is a dog as a rat is a boy. What she means is all life is on the same level. There is no superiority of human life over animal life. Let's say you're driving down the road and you come across a pig, a dog, a rat, and a boy. And they're in the middle of the road and you realize too late you can only avoid hitting one of them. In light of this statement, which one should you try to miss? Genesis tells us it matters which one we miss, and it should be the boy. We should try not to hit the boy because he is made in the image and likeness of God. Now, we don't want to hit the animals either if we can help it. Interestingly, just this morning I was reading in Numbers a story about Balaam. You remember that guy? He's riding a donkey. He's talking to his donkey. And the donkey sees the angel of the Lord in the road, and Balaam and the donkey stops. Donkey's not going because he knows the angel of the Lord will kill them both. So Balaam beats that donkey. So the donkey gets up and tries to go again, stops and smashes Balaam's leg into a wall, and Balaam's really hopping mad now, so he beats that donkey again and then tries for a third time, and Balaam hops off the donkey and just beats that donkey. And God says, or the angel of the Lord, who is a manifestation of Christ, says to Balaam, why are you beating this poor animal? Why does God care about that donkey? Because we are caretakers of lower creation. We have an obligation to them to treat them humanely. But human life is distinct. We are not animals. We are sacred. We are made in the image and likeness of God. God made you because he wanted someone just like you. This is foundational to your understanding of your identity. If you determine your own identity, you're going to have an identity crisis. For instance, if you determine that your identity is your success, that'll work great until you fail or you get fired. If you decide that my identity is that I'm a parent, well, that's going to work just great until your kids grow up and leave the house. In both of these cases, identity is not received, it's achieved. If it's achieved, it can be lost. The identity we received is to have been made in the image and likeness of God. My identity is I'm a Christian. I became a Christian when I was 16 years old. When I went to college, I was a Christian college student. When I graduated, I was a Christian graduate. When I got married, I was a Christian wife. When we had kids, I was a Christian mother. When I became a pastor, I was a Christian pastor. You see, my roles have changed, but my identity has stayed the same. In 1969, two baby girls were born on the same exact day at the same hospital in Texas, and they were accidentally switched at birth. One was born to a family of Hispanic descent, and one to a family of Swedish descent. When one of these babies grew up, she thought it would be a lot of fun to do a DNA test. Marianne, that was her name, just assumed that the results would come back showing her ancestry would be coming from Mexico. Her DNA results came back saying she was mainly Swedish. This was strange because she had been raised by a Hispanic family. So she thought, this can't be right. So she took the test again, and the second result came back exactly the same. As impossible as it seemed, science told her that she was raised by a family that she had no biological ties to. Mary Ann's parents had died several years before this shocking discovery was made, so she couldn't even ask them what had happened. But her parents had given her no reason to believe she was not theirs. However, research indicated that she was not adopted, so other things had to be considered. Could she have been a baby bought off the black market? Could she have been kidnapped? But after an extensive amount of research, both of these were discounted. There was no choice but to run a third DNA test and run it through Ancestry.com. There, they found a close family match, a full biological sister named Karen. And after she met Karen, Karen kind of helped to shed some light on what might have happened. Karen was able to reflect back on a time in her family when her baby sister was brought home from the hospital. And Karen, being a little kid herself, kind of looked at her and went, what? Because that baby had dark hair, dark skin, and she's like, let's see, we're blonde, we're very pale, we're blue-eyed, but this baby's not. Karen speculates that maybe a nurse at the hospital was tired and put the babies in wrong bassinets. Shortly before Karen's dad passed away, she asked him about that little girl that they had brought home many years ago and told her that she was her sister. He told her that the day this little baby was born, he questioned Karen's mother about the baby, because he's looking at this little baby going, she doesn't look like the rest of us. And the mother said, she's ours, she's ours. So they took that little Hispanic baby home, and a week later, Karen's mother said, you know, I don't really think she's ours. But by then, they'd already fallen in love with her and could not return the baby. After Mary Ann realized that she had been raised by a different family, she suddenly felt like she didn't know who she was anymore. She felt like she had no identity. When she was reunited with her biological family, the pieces fell into place. Mary Ann is in the front row wearing a white top, second from the right. And the other switch baby, Cynthia, is in the front row wearing a white top, second from the left. Psalm 24:1 says, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all of its people belong to him. All the world's people belong to God. If you are feeling a loss of identity and you don't know who you are, perhaps it's because you're not in the right family. You belong to the Lord, but you've allied yourself with another family. When we boil it all down, there are two families, the family of the world and the family of God. Both families have their arms open, ready to receive you, but only one family gives you the love and identity you crave. Who you are and who you will be, both in this life and the life to come, is defined by your acceptance of Jesus Christ. I urge you to define yourself in Jesus, and then you will know who you are. You are a child of God.